written by my guest, Ernie Maresca, run around the Regents off the Roulette label on the 50s on 5. Ernie is in Florida right now relaxing. He's having a good time down there.
Hey, way to go, man.
Right? That's what you're doing, right? You're kicking back by the pool?
No, I'm in my bedroom, actually. My leg's up on the bed.
There you go. Say hi. You're relaxing. That's what I
am. And I'm saying, where did the years go?
Let's talk about Morris Levy for a second.
Yeah, let's talk about Morris Levy.
Because, you know, there's everyone's got a story about Morris. He was a larger-than-life character, certainly.
Yeah, Morris was great for the music business. Opened up a lot of doors for a lot of people. Jimmy Rogers got started there with Honeycomb and all that stuff.
Right.
I'll tell you a quick story. In other words, when I was like 20 years old, 18, 19 years old, you would go around trying to sell masters, you know, like I did acetates. You would cut masters, and Billy Vera probably knows this. You go around the record companies, mm-hmm. and you try to sell them. One funny thing, I went up to Morris Levy up at Roulette. I had a master that I wanted to sell.
Do you remember which one? Do you remember what song it was?
It was by an artist called Frankie Lyndon, and I think we did the remake of one of the Four Seasons songs. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, he took it, and I think I did something else with another group that the lead there was Sacramento, Johnny Law 4, and he took that master, too. I sold a few of them to him. Actually, what you got was try to get back the cost of it, which was about $500 or whatever, and you'd ask him for like 3 or 4% and hope you get paid. And I'll give you an example of what would happen. Hey, Morris, you know, I'd like to get about 3% on this and give you 1%. Hey, Morris, I want to get like 3%. I got to pay the group. I got to pay 3%, and in those days was decent. You know, give me 3%, Morris. Give you 1%. I said, Morris, I need like 3%. I'll tell you what. He said, I'll give you 9%. What's the difference? You're still going to get the 1%. It didn't matter. Thanks, Morris. But he was great. I mean, he got a lot of outlet for guys to get their masters out and whatnot, and you hope they were a hit, and then I guess you could have probably renegotiated later with them or whatever.
Well, I think you bring up a really interesting point. You say that Morris Levy was good for the business.
Well, he was, because a lot of things came out. Don't forget, he had G Records, he had Roulette Records, he got a lot of songs played on the radio stations, and then he was involved with, I think, the Black Station, WWRL or something like that. So I know when Laurie needed certain songs played, when they were trying to do black music, I mean, then we couldn't do it, but they were trying. Morris opened a few doors for him to get know the right people and helped out. And in those days, they all helped out each other. They tried to, either way. I mean, I know as far as being like young kids, hearing Bob call up Morris a couple of times, could have helped me get this song played. Do you know anybody up at this station? Mm-hmm. And they all helped each other. And, you know, that's the way that I saw it. I mean, there were a lot of bad things there because
Sure. Nobody
got paid. I mean, I had Whenever a Teenager Cries. I mean, it came out with Reparatum the Dalrons. I never got paid a dime. It was on some company in Pittsburgh, and it went to number 19 or 18 on the charts. Bill and Steve Jerome cut. It was a great record. I mean, and next day the company was out of business.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. You know, when Seville Records, when I cut Shot, Knock Yourself Up, I was smart enough to ask the guy for post-dated checks. They were being taken over by the mafia, and there were guys in there that it was unbelievable what was going on. And then Eddie Kasner ended up buying the company out. He owns Kasner Music, and I got some post-dated checks from him before the whole thing went down the chain. And fortunately, they didn't bounce, but that was the end of that thing. I mean, I cut one record with them and the album, and that was it. Nobody ever... They were out of business, but they had a great publishing company.
Right.
And he took it over. But before that, I know it was all... They blew up the guy's house. It was in the front page of the New York Times, for God's sake. They were so involved. But anyway, what can I tell you? That's the way it was in those days. But it was interesting. It was good. Everybody had a good time. You were singing on street corners. You had a shot at getting the record out. We go up to Murray to Kate. They had the Voice Your Choice. Do this. You bring your record up. And people call in and vote on it. He played 5 records and a whole bunch of things. Yeah, it was really good.
Did you see yourself as a singer or just as a songwriter?
Really. I mean, I sang a lot of things. I was always in the studio.
Cutting demos.
Cutting demos and doing things and having the girls back me up. I had Tony Wine back me up with Bernadette Carroll and the Jigga. They became the Angels and so on and so forth.
Wow.
And cutting the demos that I would cut, I would hire the girls as background singers, you know, to make the demo the best way that I can. Some of the demos turned out so good that we thought that they were masses, and those are things I would try to sell to like people like Morris, who bought a couple of them, or at least gave you the cost of them back. You know, and you would hope to get out whatever you could, because I didn't really work for a publisher, so my songs were never really shown, except for Laurie. I had first crack because I was up there, but they had Dion, and that was it. The Chiffons weren't cut by Laurie. They were cut by Bright Tunes. That was the Tokens, you know, and the Snoopy's days, that was Phil Gernhardt, and that was later on.
Yeah.
But they only had two or three in-house acts, Dean and Gene, Dion, and then Dion left, you know, and so it was no one there.
Why did you cut Shout Shout Knock Yourself Out for Seville? Why didn't you cut it for Laurie?
I don't know. I guess they never saw me. I'm telling you, I used to go up there. I didn't really work for Laurie. I mean, and I was going around from...
you hadn't started actually... You weren't on Laurie's payroll at that point.
No, I was never on Laurie's payroll, for a year once.
I thought you had a major role in the company, in 63, 64, something like that, no?
No, later on, I ended up running their music publishing for them and things like that. But not at the... I'm talking Shout Shout came out in 1962.
Right.
I had nothing to do with Laurie. I would just go up there and bring up records, you know, and hope that they liked them or whatever. Dion took us up there. Dion took me up there, and then Gene said, get together with Ernie to write Run Around Sue. I wasn't working up there. As I just told you, we wrote it in the schoolyard.
Right.
You know.
So where did...
And, I didn't write the Wanderer up there. I bought them up an acetate that they paid me $75 for.
Right. Okay.
After all this happened, I began working up there after about 5 or 6 years. I figured, let me stay there.
Yeah.
As long as they wanted to give me a salary of $100 a week. It was better than trying to cut a demo, and then trying to sell
hustling around town.
At least I had some money coming in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Shout Shout Knock Yourself Out.
Well, Shout
started
Shout
where?
When I was going around to publishers, and I went to Broadway Music, and this is how I ended up at Broadway Music. I mean, I was in there, and, they were being taken over by, like, racketeers. Guys, I know I was strumming the guitar, and one guy was getting a beaten to the rhythm of my guitar. I said, my God, make it out of here. No, really, I'm not kidding you.
That really happened?
Yeah, I swear to God. So anyway, so they said, you want to cut a record? I said, yeah, if I could get out of here alive. And anyway, so we went in with Marvin Holtzman, who died now, not now, but about 15 years ago. And we cut Shout Shout, Knock Yourself Out. It was out for about 6 months. And then finally I went on the road with Danny Kessler, and I think they broke it in Whistler, Mass. Somehow.
Really?
Yeah, that's how they broke. I think Dick Smith was the DJ up there. It broke about 6 months later. I forgot about it. I don't even think I had a contract with them. It didn't matter. They were out of business. Then Eddie Kasner came in, took over the whole thing, or just as I was cutting the record came in, and there was still some problems going on there. I don't know what it was, but they ended up solving it all, and Kasner is a big music publisher today. He passed away. His son is David Kasner, a very nice guy. And they published the song, Shout Shout, Knock Yourself Out.
And it went top 10.
And they also had the Kinks and all that.
It went to
so they're a legitimate business.
It went to number 6. So you had a top 10 record. Were you on Bandstand?
No, I was on Clay Cole. But I never did Bandstand. I did Clay Cole. I did... whole bunch of other shows. I didn't really...
Buddy Dean? Did you go on the Buddy Dean show?
Yeah, I remember that. Is that in Baltimore?
That was Baltimore, yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I did his show, and he had told me, you got like three, four things in the top 100. I think I had Run Around Sue coming off. The Wanderer was just coming on. I went on with 20 with a bullet or whatever. And I had Shout Shout, Knock Yourself Out. I had something else. It was really good.
And you said the Del Satins were the guys backing you up on...
They backed me up on Shout Shout, Knock Yourself Out. Yeah, they backed up Dion, I think, on all his things.
Yeah.
They were great.
That's great. Well, let's hear Shout Shout Knock Yourself Out.
All right.
Ernie Maresca. Joining me here on the Night Prowl Show, it's East Coast Thursday, XM Satellite Radio.
Hey, we're having a party now, it's just begun. We're all over here and having fun. Joe's all alone and he wants to be kissed. But Mary's in a corner and she's doing a twist. So let's shout. Song like a runaround zoo. Whoa, let's do a dance that we all can do. I turn that jukebox up mighty loud and let's liven up this crazy crowd.
Dean and Gene. Hey, Dean. Hey, Gene. Written by my guest on the Night Prowl Show this evening, Ernie Maresca. Ernie, you wrote that song, and it sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun recording it, too.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Who was back there? I mean, it sounds like you got a whole crowd of people,
singing
along.
Yeah, it was me. I'm like the Alfred Hitchcock of the record business. I was back there screaming, shout, shout, shout. You gotta yell, yell, yell. Me and the guitar player. You know, in those days, you just overdubbed and overdubbed and overdubbed.
Right.
Of course, when Gene cut The Wanderer and Run Around Sue, you know, they only had, like, I think, two track. And a matter of fact, Dion did The Wanderer on the second take. Could you imagine that?
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, two takes. If you ever heard the first, you wouldn't believe it. It's on one of those albums out there that I heard. I couldn't believe it.
I actually do have the first take of that. Yeah, we should pull that one out.
Yeah.
Who were Dean and Gene?
They were writers that came from Cleveland. They wrote Charles Susie also. They wrote with a guy named Tommy Tucker. I think he was another guy that did a lot of...
High heel sneakers, Tommy Tucker?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. And they knew Dionne Warwick. They were friends with her. They were wonderful people. I think Gene just passed away about a year ago or something like that. They were really great, good people. They cut a lot of good records for Lori, and they should have had many hits. But they only had, I think, two of them that made the charts. Dean A. Gene, and I think Charles Susie.
And both made the top 40, too, which isn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they were in the top 20.
Yeah.
They were a good group. They were very talented. They may have even had something to do with the writing of High Heel Sneakers. I'm not sure. But they wrote quite a few things that were really good. They wrote The Majestic, by the way.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh,
they wrote
The
Majestic.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, they were great. They were great writers. I was sorry to hear that she passed away. Well, too bad.
Yeah. Well... when you do a show like mine, it's every week now I'm getting news. It's
tell me about it. Well, I hope I'm not next. Every week. Give me a break.
Well, now, the good thing is that it's not right after I interview somebody, so okay. You at least got another 2 weeks
coming.
Hey, I met
the cat. All right.
Now, Bernadette Carroll, one of my favorite songs that you wrote was Party Girl, and... It's got a good feel to it. It's an up-tempo record, but what I really like about it is it's like two songs in one. You've got that sort of burner, durner, 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 and then it goes into the up-tempo, I want to be a party girl, and that whole thing. And it's cool because it really is like there's two songs in one. You got two hooks is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Some people are lucky just to have one hook, Ernie, but you got two hooks on that record.
Well, she sang it great too, so... You know, that made it.
And you
she
said
really
she,
did a great job.
You said she became a part of the Angels? She was an angel?
I think, yeah, because I haven't seen Bernadette maybe 40 years and maybe another 40 years because I talked to her a few times and it's just never going to happen, I guess. But if she ever comes to Florida, we'll go out and have dinner or whatever. But she was great. She really was. Lori had high hopes for her, and I don't know what happened. She cut this one record, and then I think she became involved with the Angels or was the Angel or one of them, and still is, I think. I don't know, one of the girls. I know they used to do background work for me on the demos. I did a couple of things singing with Bernadette, which was great. She was great and still is. I mean, and I think she had something to do with Lou Christie, and still does. I mean, she has her own website now.
What's her web address?
I don't have it offhand.
We can find that.
Yeah, my wife will send it to you.
It's probably BernadetteCarroll.com. I mean, let's...
Yeah.
We could probably take a stab at that. I'll take a look at that. If anyone has a question for Ernie Maresca, just drop me a line, mattthecat@xmradio.com, and I will certainly ask Ernie your questions for you.
My wife just sent it to me. It's www.jerseygirls.com.
Jerseygirlssing.com.
Jerseygirlssing.com.
All right.
If anybody wanted a whatever.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear the song. I mean, it's such a great record, and it does not get the respect. It doesn't get the airplay that it deserves even nowadays. So I want to play Party Girl, Bernadette Carroll.
Yeah, I play it on Comcast a lot also.
All right. Well, we're going to play it right here on XM Satellite Radio.
All right. Thanks.
DeMucci on the 50s on 5. I'm here with Ernie Maresca, who wrote that record with Dion, right?
Right.
And you said it was about his sister?
Yeah, Donna. So we wrote it. So let's write a song about my sister. I said, all right, what's her name? Donna, and we wrote Donna the Prima Donna.
It's not the most flattering song about his sister, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
But
we did it, Zsa Zsa Gabor and all that.
Yeah. You wrote Lovers Who Wander, too, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was a good one. That was a real good one.
Yeah.
Now, I got a question from Long Island Bob. He wrote in at mattthecat@xmradio.com. He wants to know if back in the day at Laurie Records, if you remember the old man that used to sit in the corner.
Yeah, Bob and Gene's father. And Gene Schwartz's father. That was Abe Schwartz. He used to work for Irving Berlin Music, and then he... got old, and you know, they used to bring him up to the office. In those days, I don't think they knew about Alzheimer's, but he may have had that.
Did he just
used to come up there?
Yeah.
And sometimes you go out and get him a paper or whatever. They would just waste the day away.
He wouldn't say anything. He'd just sit in the corner.
Well, he would sit there. I mean, really not really talk to a lot of people. He was, I guess, he was probably about 80 at that time.
They didn't run songs by him or anything like that.
No, he had nothing to do with
okay.
I don't think he really was aware of too many things. He was a good man, but he was sick, you know, so they probably took him up there just to be somewhere.
To watch over him and all, right?
Yeah. No, he was there. It was just, so he would be with his sons or whatever. They probably took him out of the house and had a place to go to. Well, I forget. Like I said, he was that's probably how they got into the music business, because he worked for Irving Berlin Music, you know. And then they started their own, record company. And they probably, I have no idea what they took him up to, but he was there, and that's who he was. He was the father of the owners of the company, Bob and Gene Schwartz. He was a wonderful man. I always liked him, Abe Schwartz.
Very nice. Now, you started, when you got on the actual payroll, when you were working for Laurie, it was what, 64, 65, 66?
Yeah, I worked there for a year. They gave me $100 a week, and then they said they had to cut corners, so they stopped it, and I never left. Then I ended up... That's the truth.
I ended up
owning half of the publishing with Bob Schwartz. And then when Gene died, his wife had their one-third of it, and she's out in San Diego somewhere. And so we had the publishing, myself, Bob, who's still alive. Bob is 84 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was still alive.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
He's still alive. He's still got all his... senses and whatnot.
Fantastic. Now, you stayed with Laurie, though, for a long time. Now, how, as a label, it changed hands a lot of times, right? Who owned Laurie over the years?
Well, it never changed hands.
It
stayed
always
Lurie.
It stayed independent.
They just tried to do different things. They tried to do black music, which they had no way of knowing what to go on. Then they went into mail order. They were doing mail order. They had Aunt Camilla's Italian Favorites. That did pretty good. They couldn't make a hit if their life depended on it.
You know, I have that record.
Yeah, I did that with the Teardrops. Good friends of mine that play in Atlantic City. At Caesars, you know, and they're still there.
Yeah.
One of them died, but yeah, that was a great...
Aunt Camilla's Italian Favorites. I got that record. Sure, that was a double record set.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's what I put together with the Teardrops.
Well, I'm going to have to pull it out. I don't think there's a... It's very a minimal packaging.
They got a
packaging.
Song on there that I wrote called Tell Me Mama. That's the only original song on there. All the rest are Dean Martin, Connie Francis,
yeah,
whatever.
Lou Monte.
Yeah, Lou Monte, yeah.
Yeah. Lazy Mary's on there.
Huh?
Lazy Mary's on there.
Yeah,
and Angelina.
Hey.
All right, so it's the 60s now, and it's the late 60s, and, you know, a lot of people like Dion and also Bobby Darin.
Dion was out of there. He was on Columbia.
Right, but where I was going is that people like Dion and like Bobby Darin, we're starting to do more of a folk thing, starting to be a little more socially conscious,
right.
You know? And then you write this song, Child of Clay, which is, I mean, practically define the socially conscious genre, if there is a genre like that. And Jimmy Rogers cut it. Now, how did you sit down and write a song? That's a very heavy song. How did that come about?
Well, first of all, it was written with Jimmy Curtis, Jimmy Stolberg, a great writer. I haven't seen him since, and who knows where he is. I hope he's all right. We made a demo, because we used to write a whole bunch of songs. And this is one of the demos. I sent it out. I think I got the guy's right name at A&M Records, Alan Stanton. And I sent it out to him, and then we get a call about 6 months later. He says, I just cut this thing with Jimmy Rogers. You got to listen to it. It's great, Ernie. Thanks. And I says, fine. He plays it over the phone. I thought it was great. I think Jimmy had a show at that time,
mm-hmm.
and it came out. It was going up the charts, and then Jimmy got hurt, as you know, and the song went right off the charts. I spoke to Jimmy about 2 years ago or something. Great guy. It was really nice talking to him. I sent him some CDs that I had and whatnot, and the song is great, absolutely a great song, and Jimmy's version is unbelievable. They should re-release that, really.
Yeah,
great.
Well, it's available on a Rhino compilation of the best of Jimmy Rogers.
And Rhino is great. They do all these things.
They
that
do.
Are absolutely great.
Yeah, and it ends the compilation, and you know, I'd like to close our interview with that.
Yeah, one last thing. They have a Turtles thing on YouTube where they talk about the managers. It's so hilarious. But anyway, Jimmy Rogers, if he's listening, hi, Jimmy, how you doing? But no, that's a great song.
Ernie, it was so great having you on the
my
show.
My pleasure, Matt the Cat.
And whether you like it or not, I'm going to have you back on the show.
All right, Matt the Cat, I'm right here.
All right, we're going to end it with Child of Clay, Jimmy Rogers. It's out of the decade, but you got to hear this. 50s on 5, Night Prowl Show.
Into the darkness he was sent by parents who were ignorant. Tied down to his mother's strings, unable to be anything. Puzzled by the things he hears, his questions fall on their deaf ears. And the father, thinking work comes first, ain't got the time to quench a thirst. No, 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 no. Once he was a child, a beautiful child.